everybody, and welcome to another new edition of Live from Pawnee. I'm Alan, and with me, that's easy for me to say, isn't it, Mark?
I don't know. I'm not in your head.
Yeah. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Mark. Mark, how are you today?
It looks like I'm going to have to carry the show today. I'm doing well.
I've got the marble marbles going on this morning. Yeah.
Doing well, Sir Alan of the Roundtable. Maybe your problem is what I had to do to fix my problem this morning, which is I had a delicious, delicious cup of Arbucks coffee. Yeah, yeah. It's the lifeblood of the studio, you know?
It really is.
Have you had any?
I have one right now. I'm waiting for it to cool off. I'm a bit of a wimp when it comes to temperature on coffee. I got to admit that.
Okay.
It's got to be a little... not steaming hot. Let's put it that way.
So do you like iced coffee?
Actually, I do like iced coffee, but I still prefer... now you got me. I also like hot coffee, just not scalding hot coffee.
Sorry, I was taking a drink of my scalding hot coffee.
I saw that, yeah.
That's what gets me going. Yeah, I love it. Extra caffeine and the blueberry. I don't know what flavor it is. I think it's cinnamon.
Actually, today you've got brown sugar... with salted caramel.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I feel fancy.
Yeah. A bit fancy.
Yeah, the barista
do it at Arbucks.
The barista was very, very nice this morning. He's very good at his job. A little surly.
Well, come on, it's early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I know. That's why he needs to drink his own product.
That is true.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get him on that. So. Well, hey, Mark, we're here this week. What?
I'm excited.
Hey, speaking of excited, tell me a little bit about what's going on with our interns. Like, I'm so confused. Like,
who?
Well, they're the guys, you know, what are they called? Harvey and...
I've written them off.
Yeah. Well, they're in the future. They're stuck there.
They're in the future. They're stuck there.
And we have their robotic backup devices here, kind of named after them in homage. What's the latest?
Like, I don't know if it's just that they're named in homage or if we actually put part of their souls in there. At a certain point, science and magic merge.
They do.
So
clearly.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know science.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt is time travel is real.
Yeah.
And
of course.
We have a nuclear
power. Our buddy Steve knows that.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve.
He just didn't want to
Steve's
admit
a disbeliever.
It. Yeah.
And then we have a nuclear powered robot behind us.
Yes.
That is helping us produce our podcast.
That's true.
Because he didn't have anything. I mean, what else is he going to do?
Yeah.
Robonstantine.
That's who you're talking about.
Yeah. Talking about Robonstantine.
Yeah.
And then we also have Carvey, who's supposed to be Harvey's counterpart.
Right.
And I think that Robonstantine has been going into the back and pulling wires. So he didn't want Carvey to become sentient like he is.
So in the way that the person's version of these two, right, Constantine and Harvey, are not necessarily best friends, you're saying that our two robotic substitutes are also not friends.
I think they may have gotten that either because, as I said, from their souls, or at least they learned from their human counterparts that they don't like each other real good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's just pulling Harvey's wires, or Carvey's wires, excuse me, like he would in real life.
That'd be something if their consciousness were stuck in these machines, but their bodies are in the future. I don't know how that works. I don't know how you come back from that.
Well, you know, Alan, in the Joss Whedon show Dollhouse.
Yeah, I remember Dollhouse.
Yeah. So you can take someone's consciousness and you back it up onto VHS.
Well, sure.
And then there's these copy things where you can copy movies.
Yeah.
You just copy it.
Just copy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a VHS tape.
It's just a file transfer. It's easy. It's fine. So yeah, they're completely in the robots. And
so when they come back, we just insert that back in the body and we're done.
I think there's going to be.
Then we just have to decommission a nuclear device. No big deal.
Well, I mean. It would be a shame to waste it.
It really would.
Like, we could at least have him, I don't know what he could make us coffee or something.
I think he could.
Yeah.
Fetch the mail.
But I think that Carvey, because Harvey's a no good Nick.
That's right.
We've written him off. But Carvey, the R&D team here has tried several things to try and, get him to, you know, the level of, let's say, a Robonstantine.
Well, sure. Yeah, they're not the same.
So the litany of things they've done is that he's now backwards compatible with PlayStation 1. We knew that. He helped out Arbucks Coffee when their espresso machine broke.
Right. I remember that.
One of his arms was like a Mr. Coffee.
It was kind of personal getting a cup of coffee
that day. And then the other is Mr. Fusion. I mean, Mr. Espresso. And Then they tried to make like a Tony Stark Iron Man suit out of him, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
So I think I've seen them in the car garage lately. I think they're going to try and like, you remember that great, great science fiction, hard science fiction show, Back to the Future?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I learned everything I know about time travel.
It's totally real. And then, so I think what they're going to try to do is they have some sort of like spaghetti noodle that they call the flux capacitor. They're going to just flop that in there and
see if it works.
They're going to, I think that's how they're betting we're going to rescue them.
Oh,
the guys.
All right.
Yeah.
So we'll do that 80 miles an hour thing and wait for a lightning strike. And that seems very complicated.
Yeah,
I mean, I like those guys, but that's a lot of work.
Well, this, I don't think that we need to wait for a lightning strike. I think this is fueled by Arbex coffee.
Oh,
well,
there you go.
Well, it's got to be salted caramel.
And a nuclear reactor. Don't forget that.
There's that.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't want to give more credence to one than the other, but yeah.
Yeah, that's probably
it. You got to mix them together.
That's probably it. Yeah. Well, you know what we should talk about next, Mark, is the thing we're here to talk about. No, I think we need to.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, boys and girls. We're here to talk about season 7, episode 8, Ms. Ludgate Dwyer Goes to Washington.
Yeah.
This first aired on February 10th of 2015 and was the first of two episodes that aired that night.
Right. Back to back.
Yeah. The next episode was Primary. Which I want to, I got a confession about Primary, but I'm going to save it to our coverage. For
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Mm. It's like what, deep, dark secrets. Mm. Yeah, so stay tuned for that.
Mm.
Yeah, so, I think the rest of the evening was Marry Me, About a Boy, and Chicago Fire. I think
that one show? Yeah.
That basically, yeah, Marry Me, About a Boy, Chicago Fire. Chicago Fire is still on. That's the crazy thing to me.
Yeah, that's the only part of the show that survived.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Chicago Fire.
They got divorced, and the boy became a man.
Yeah, boom.
A fireman. Genius.
But they never put
I'm gonna slow clap myself for that one.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. Thank
well
you.
Done. Yeah. They never put out the Chicago Fire. It's still raging.
No, it's still raging.
Yeah,
yeah.
What can you? Well, so the fireman clearly didn't do his job.
Well, he tried. That's what's important.
Yeah,
well, it was a heroic effort.
It is a hero. It's a noble, noble thing.
You know else? You know who else are heroes, Mark?
I know.
Our director and our writer. I'll tell you who those were.
Who that is.
Yeah, so the Golden Megaphone today goes to Morgan Sackett.
Oh, like him.
Yeah, Morgan's a producer of Parks and Rec, all 124 episodes.
Holy
cow. He directed 5, and this is his 5th of 5. They went on to be associated with The Good Place, Veep, and Hacks.
So, all good shows.
Veep started before he was done on Parks and Rec, but there was some overlap there.
And you really like Hacks.
I really like Hacks. Yeah. I kind of talked about it last week. And if you haven't watched it, tune in. That's a great show. Dave King was our writer, gets the Golden Pen solo this week. This is his 7th of 7 as our writer, our primary writer of the episode. And he's also a producer in seasons 6 and 7 specifically. And he's known also for Parks and Rec, The Good Place, and The Bubble in 2022. So interesting.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Good to have Dave and Morgan with us today for the last time. So we'll be saying goodbye to them.
All right.
And I'm sure we'll be saying goodbye to at least one other person today. And we'll get into that here in a bit.
That's right.
Mark, why don't you get us into our synopsises?
All right. Synopsises incoming. All right. This is an interesting one. I'm so used to shows having 3 stories.
Sure.
This one, I only had 2.
There you go.
There we go.
Nice job.
Awesome. Okay. I got it right.
Yeah.
There we go. And so I suppose you want me to tell you about.
Why don't you tell me about the 2?
The synopsis. Yeah, that's the way we usually do this. You got to pull like full teeth here.
Yeah.
So,
I know that the coffee hasn't kicked in fully yet.
No,
we'll get there.
It really hasn't.
Yeah.
So my A and B story. So my A story I have as entitled "Giving Bad News to a Good Person." Leslie and April are headed to Washington, D.C. to convince a bunch of senators to support the national parks. They've prepped, and Leslie is excited and convinced that April will show how thorough and hardworking she truly is. However, April is quietly freaking out about having to break it to Leslie at some point that bureaucracy is not her calling. You know, as a friend, we've said this, Alan, Leslie is loyal and thoughtful, and she's caring to a fault. You can say all that about her, but she's also really stubborn, and she's convinced that she knows what everybody needs, not just herself. So it's
classic
a challenge,
Leslie,
right?
Yeah.
Classic. So as Leslie, April, and teammate Randy, who I don't think we've met before.
No, Randy's like her colleague at Interiors, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So Leslie, April, and Randy have meeting after meeting with senators, and it seems like things are going well. Like they're getting decent responses. And, yeah. And actually, during a one-on-one walk with Randy, Leslie is even offered a promotion to the position of Deputy Director of Operations and Interior. So, holy cow.
Yeah.
Despite all this, we see April just getting more and more anxious about telling Leslie the truth. And finally, while sitting with Leslie and listening to her news about the offered promotion, April finally gives in to her anxieties and blurts out that she wants to quit the National Park Service.
Wow.
What will happen? How does Leslie take April's news? Does Leslie end up taking the promotion? Will Leslie have to lean on her good friend Madeline Albright for advice? Can April ever figure out what job she actually wants? Stay tuned to find out. ...
Wow. Who knew that April not knowing what she wanted to do is going to be like a season-long arc?
A multi-season.
Multi-season arc.
Yeah, this started going on in season five.
Five? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I think we visited it. You're right. We started it in season five. Just a little bit. A lot in season six, but it would ebb and flow. And right. Now we're back to it.
Yes, that's a fair way to put
it. This time I'm having less trouble buying it than I have in the past. The timing's weird to me, but yeah, we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Mark, my title for this one was DC can also stand for don't care.
Oh, that's true.
So there you
go. It's acronyms.
Yeah, it's acronyms.
Catch the fever.
Fun with acronyms.
So I guess you want me to talk now about my B story.
B story,
yeah,
yes,
here please. We go. Yeah. So my B story I have as entitled, Three Heads Are Better Than One, But Just Barely.
That's true.
Yeah, here we go.
By one.
Knowing April is unhappy with her current job situation, Andy waits until she is gone on her trip to D.C., see the A story above,
yeah,
and then reaches out to Ben to brainstorm some new jobs April could maybe pursue. Well, their first stop is meeting with Ron at the very good building and development company. And Ron tries his best to help, but unfortunately, the routine sort of work that he has available, it doesn't quite fit what April wants as far as like creativity and all that stuff. Nevertheless, it's a good thing to get someone out of government. So Ron wants to help him out and join in this endeavor to find the perfect job for her. So their second stop, and this makes a little bit more sense, is a meeting with Barney Varman.
I love Barney.
Tilton and Redondo. I love these guys.
Yeah.
And so Barney, who along with everybody else at the accounting firm, absolutely loves Ben. We
even
know that.
Frank turned. He's a Ben fan now.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's a Benophile.
Benophile.
I got to call it something else. So Ben tells them, or Barney tells them rather, that Tilton and Radomski is opening a consulting arm.
Ooh, yeah.
And so, I don't know, this could involve a lot of creative thinking. And so the good news, it sounds like this could maybe be a good fit for April. But the bad news, it's too late. And they aren't taking any more applications.
Oh,
however.
Right. I guess that's over.
Well, no. It's after discussing it, because the guys, they discuss things.
Yeah.
And so after discussing this, they decide that they're going to make one last final attempt to pitch April to Barney to convince him to give her a shot.
Okay.
How will this turn out? Who else do the guys get to help out with their final pitch to Barney? What secret plan does Andy have to help out? Is the pitch successful? And if so, does April end up working for Barney? Stick around, podcast viewers. All will be revealed. ...
Yeah, Andy's secret plans always turn out so well.
They totally turn out well.
This one's going to be fine.
It's flawless.
It's all going to be fine.
There's no way it could fail.
Mark, my B story title, or retitling, if you will. You know the movie Operation Dumbo Drop, right?
Do I?
Yeah, one of your favorites, I know.
Yeah, that's
sure.
Got Murtaugh in it.
It does. Yeah,
and I know things.
Yeah, was in that as well. So,
who?
Ray Liotta.
Oh, him.
From Goodfellas.
He's not in. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He went on the A team.
He's no Lethal Weapon.
No, he's no Lethal Weapon. That's true.
Murtaugh's in it.
So, Operation April Lift. I don't know. I had trouble titling this one, but it fits. Like, you got this team of people. They're focused on lifting April up.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole episode is a lot about April.
You know, you should have just called it the A team, because April.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first title was April Showers Bring May Jobs. A seasonal homage. So yeah.
I would have said April Showers Make Leslie Cry.
Oh, that's good.
I don't know.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's tough.
Because you get the water theme there.
Yeah.
I see what you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm much better at things when I don't care about them and I do them after the fact.
Well, let's see about that. What's your AKA?
My AKA. This was actually very early on in the episode, and Ben claims that he knows what's going on in April's head, and she says, "Welcome to the Terror Dome."
Oh, that's so good.
How about you?
That could be a T-shirt, Mark.
Yup, yeah. I know.
Mine is just I think actually just after that same scene. In fact, this is Leslie reacting to this idea that they kind of test on Leslie to see how she might react to even something bigger.
Yeah, because she's really open minded. Yeah,
so they're gonna change the font.
Oh no, no.
And she's. She says, "I appreciate your initiative, but itineraries are not the place to mess around."
I agree.
So, I mean, you know, so if she's upset about messing with the font on that itinerary, she's going to take April quitting just fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she may not be quite as open-minded as April was hoping for.
Yeah, well, Ben, I don't know what planet Ben's living on where he thinks April.
Radomski.
Planet Radomski. Yeah, I'd visit that planet.
I totally would.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, Mark, let's get into our break.
They have calzones there.
Did they ever?
That's what I heard.
Yeah.
All right. So we're ready to do this thing, huh?
Yeah. Let's get the breakdown going.
All right. So hold on. I got to go back here to my robotic buddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're buddies now.
We almost we got the show. We turn him on.
Yeah. He's in Windows Saver mode.
Yeah. We power him down for your safety as you sleep in the studio.
Yeah. I sleep in the studio now. It's just a short commute to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, before we wrap up this whole thing, I really hope we can get the guys back from the future, right? And that you can move out of the studio. Because when the podcast wraps, Mark, I don't know what's going to happen.
Look, one ridiculous problem at a time.
Fair enough.
All right. Yeah. Ridiculous problem number one, and I'm going to turn around.
Okay.
I'm turning to my robotic buddy. How you doing, robotic? Oh, he's asleep. He can't hear me.
Yeah, he can't hear you.
Right. So I'm going to turn it on. So back up a little bit.
Yeah, I've got everything covered.
It could be dangerous. Nuclear powered. All right. One, two, three.
Robonstantine online.
All right.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh.
His eyes normally glow red. No, there they went. They're white now. Never mind.
It's
all going to be fine.
That means I love you.
Those were hearts, red hearts in his eyes.
I keep telling myself
Let's go with that. Yeah. Fair enough.
So are you ready to help us out, buddy? He's ready. Okay. He's got it.
He's ready to go.
All right. Red eyes, white eyes, whatever it takes, Bob. Yeah. All right, what are we doing?
The breakdown.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're doing. Okay, so let's start with the cold open, very good place to start. And so we start out at City Hall, and we see Leslie and April and Ben gathered in Leslie's office as Leslie preps April for their big upcoming trip to Washington, D.C.
Hey, Robonstantine, play that first clip, sir.
Okay, so the central question that these senators are going to be asking is, why should we invest in the National Park Service? April.
Well, it is simple, Leslie. In today's fast-paced society, national parks are still the best place for full moon werewolf transformations.
I know you're kidding, but I also know that you're prepared, and we are going to do great. How psyched are you about this trip? April, are you super psyched?
Mm. Yeah. Also, you have lipstick on your teeth.
I do? Okay, good looking out. We're a great team.
Well, I never thought I'd say this, but I think I know what's going on in your head.
Oh, well then, welcome to the Terror Dome.
Okay, you need to tell Leslie that you want to leave your job.
No, she freaks out when anything changes. One time Andy told her that I was getting rid of my bangs and she called 911.
Okay, well, I can't keep your secret much longer. Anytime your name comes up, I panic and change the subject to the Twin Peaks reboot till she gets bored.
So you talk for 1 second?
You're gonna spend the next couple days with her. If you talk to her directly and honestly, she can be surprisingly open-minded.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Hey, Leslie, I was thinking about changing the font on the itineraries. What do you think?
What? Why? On what grounds? Those fonts are perfect. It's readable and compact. It's all on one page. That's insane. Don't mess with that. I mean, I appreciate your initiative, but itineraries are not the right place to mess around.
Yeah, April, I told you that was an absurd idea.
Wow. He pushed her under the bus so fast, she didn't even know what happened.
Et tu, Wyatt.
So, yeah. Yeah, so she's going to be fine with the bigger stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not looking real promising right now.
The font talk makes me reminiscent of another one of my favorite shows, The Middle. Yeah. I can't get past it. We're headed to Disney not too long from now, and I was on the site, and I actually saw the place where you can get the custom embroidered hats. And I just, again, you know, that episode just cracks me up every time.
I love Brick.
Yeah. Well, Mark, we kick off the main episode at April and Andy's creepy house. And as April prepares to leave for her trip with Leslie, Andy is determined to find her a job while she's away.
That's right. So we now cut to, as you said, April and Andy's creepy house in the creepy district. Well, all right. In Beachview Terrace,
soon to not be the creepy district.
Soon to not be, because it's going to be the location of the new Grizzle campus.
It's going to be worth $1 billion soon. Yeah,
$1 billion. And so we see April venting to Andy about how she doesn't want to tell Leslie that she's planning to quit the National Park Service. So she understandably, I think, as we just established, she's worried about how Leslie is going to react. And I think she's also a little bit embarrassed because although she knows she wants to quit her current job, she didn't know what job she wants to jump to. And we then learn via Andy talking head that he's going to rally the team. He's going to get the band back together, so to speak. And they're all going to get together and try to brainstorm until they figure out a new job for April, starting with a call to Ben.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, Andy and Ben now head over to see if, as her favorite government-hating mentor, Ron might have a position to fit April's, let's just call it, unique set of skills.
Oh, holy cow. Yeah, it's now a little bit later, and April's gone. I think she and Leslie are like en route to the airport.
I believe they're leaving.
And so we see Andy and Ben now visiting Ron at the very good building and development company. And Ron has a good chuckle regarding April leaving her government job, as well he should.
Of course.
And then Andy suggests, hey, maybe you could give April a job, Ron.
Not crazy considering their relationship.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I mean, he definitely knows she's smart and capable.
Yeah, he knows that she's more than what's on the surface.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ron is open to the idea and starts to give Andy and Ben a tour of the facilities. And along the way, Ron introduces them to the vice president, Don Swanson.
That's weird.
And we see a man about the same height and build as Ron, dressed somewhat like Ron, clean cut and sporting
similar beardage.
Very impressive facial hair.
Yes,
and
yes, he does.
Ben and Andy are stunned and point blank ask, "Is this your brother?" And Ron pauses and tries half-heartedly to deny it.
Yeah.
And then grudgingly admits, "Yes, I have a brother, one brother." And as he says, one brother, we see Ron making a subtle
flick of the wrist,
waving away gesture. And we see two other very Ron Swanson looking gentlemen pause back up and go the other way. So as far as we know, one brother.
One brother.
Your Honor.
Yeah. That's all there is. We don't need to talk about more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, April and Leslie are at the airport waiting for their plane to board when it looks like April might finally get the nerve to share her feelings with Leslie when we get a look at the world's largest binder. The second largest binder.
Wow. Yeah, that's saying something.
Yeah.
Because she has quite a history of binders.
She really does, yeah.
All right. Yeah, we now cut to the Pawnee Airport where we see Leslie and April waiting until they can board their plane. Row, Bonstantine. Play that clip.
Okay, carry-on bags packed, trashy magazines purchased, boarding passes in hand, and we have 26 minutes for unstructured chat time. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know, nothing.
I thought maybe we could talk about your future. You want to talk about your future?
Yeah. I've actually been thinking about that a lot lately.
Yeah, I figured. It's hard at your age to figure out your path.
I know.
Yeah. I was going to surprise you with this in Washington, but, you know, what the heck? It's unstructured chat time.
Yeah.
So, ta-da. This is your clear, definitive path through the federal government. It starts here today with this flight, and it goes all the way to 2022. Cool, right?
Wow. This is intense.
I had to make some guesses about your ultimate government objectives and your fashion choices, et cetera. But the point is, with this, you don't have to worry.
I know. I feel so relaxed.
Yeah, I know.
What's up with these shirts?
GovBuds for life. Just a little fun I was having, you know? I didn't really make the shirts.
But did you, though?
Yes, I did. Ta-da!
Look at that.
Oh, and also, I have a middle seat.
Hey, bro! Group one is boarding!
Oh, my.
Oh, poor Gov bro. Buds for life.
Gov Buds for life.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I mean, it's the thought that counts, right?
It's very sweet in Leslie style, but we can see there during April's final talking head to us where she's like, oh, and I have a middle seat.
Yeah.
She's looking at the camera with a somewhere between panic and desperation.
Somewhere in the
like
middle.
She didn't know what to do.
Yeah. Holding the 5-year plan for her life that Leslie has, you know, presumptively put together.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, Mark, back at the VGBDC, that's what we call it when we're in the know.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just easier to say.
I know.
Ron lays out at least one possibility for April before the guys realize that the specific position may not be the perfect match for April.
Yeah, we head back to the beady mm-hmm. company.
Yeah, easy for me to say. Yeah, right. Right.
And we see Ron giving Andy and Ben a description of the potential job that Ron has in mind for April. Mm. So it sounds like he is definitely willing hire her, right?
Yeah.
Well, the job in question is functional and no doubt performs a necessary and helpful service. And April would likely be paid well for it, I would imagine, but ultimately sounds kind of boring. And all of them, Ron included, come to the conclusion that this might be a dead end. However, just because Ron couldn't get April to work for him doesn't mean he's done helping. After all, as he says, getting a good person out of government is a worthwhile endeavor.
Not untrue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mark, isn't this a scene where as they go to leave, the other two guys who
that he waved off earlier.
He waved off earlier there and Ron says to each of them, Vaughn, Lon.
Ron.
Yeah.
And they all say in
unison. It's weird how all the names rhyme, even though those guys aren't his brothers.
I think if you notice, like at this point, Ben almost has whiplash from how many times he's mugged to the camera.
It's true.
Yeah.
He does, yeah. I think he's got the idea that we have, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which may be that Ron is lying.
Right.
Well, by this point, Leslie and April.
Ron doesn't lie.
No.
Maybe Camo.
Camo lies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still one of my favorite lines of his. It's so good. Oh, boy. Well, Mark, by this point, Leslie and April have arrived in D.C., and the first of several meetings are about to begin, and we get off to a bit of a questionable start.
Yeah. So, as you said, we are now in Washington, D.C., and we look to be it's now a little bit later. And where we see Leslie and April in D.C. and they're talking with Randy, as you said, I think Leslie's counterpart in the interior. Right. And Randy's going to be taking the lead, it sounds like, when they meet with the senators later on, but encourages them to, you know, help out and jump in whenever
they
want.
Yeah.
And a little bit later, we see the three of them meeting with Senator Barbara Boxer. And despite April's earlier snarky comments, yeah, she actually does a decent job helping out. And it seems as though the trio has swayed Senator Boxer in their favor.
I was just so glad she did not bring the Hamburglar back up with Senator Boxer.
I was a little disappointed she didn't bring up the Hamburglar.
Fair enough. Randy was a little worried that she was going to, though, right?
Look, I smile every time I hear about the Hamburglar. Like, it's a joyous, joyous thing. It's theft, I grant you.
Sure. I mean, but he ate them. No, that's just straight up theft. I was trying to make something good out of it, but he just ate everybody's food.
But it leaves me with some of the best advice I've ever had in my life, which is robble, robble.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You have to be a certain age, Mark. You know what I'm saying? Just go look up Hamburglar on YouTube or on the TikTok kids.
All right. Well, no, here's the thing.
What?
You don't have to be a certain age because they rebooted the Hamburglar.
Oh, they did. You're not wrong about that.
And it's not the same because he looks like a sweet little Cabbage Patch doll now.
Yeah.
That's not the way he looked before.
He was a little on the terrifying side when I was a kid. Yeah, I remember that.
It was a little
and
bit
Grimace
of a...
was disturbing, too. He's all cute and purple now, like Barney.
Grimace was very much something wicked this way comes.
Yes, yes.
And the Hamburglar was it was not good.
It was not good.
It was like the Hamburglar scared me as much as Santa Claus did in A Christmas Story.
ho, ho, ho.
You kick him right down the slide and he steals hamburgers.
Well, hey, check out the first Mickey Mouse costumes. Those were terrifying, too. So,
yeah.
I think the construction.
He needed the money. Mickey needed the money.
He did. He looked down and out. Oh, boy. Well, Mark, back in Pawnee, we now revisit some familiar territory and a few familiar characters to see if there might just be a good fit for April in the finance sector.
I am so excited about this. Yeah. All right, we cut back to Pawnee, and we visit, God help me, we visit one of my favorite places on Earth, Tilton and Radomski Accounting. Robonstantine, I'll play the clip.
What kind of a business is this? Is it like hitmen or astronauts?
Yep.
It's an accounting firm, but they recently opened up a consulting wing. And consulting is perfect for April.
You think this Barney fellow will listen to what we have to say?
Ben! Ben is here. Hi, Ben. Tad! Ben is here.
Hey, it is actuarially very good to see you guys.
Yes!
They like me here.
You gotta hear this!
Oh my God. Andy's reaction to Barney's like cackle laugh.
Yeah. It scared.
It's scared under attack.
Death.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love, love, love this whole thing. I love how every time Barney is talking to Ben, he like turns out, Ted. And we never see Ted.
We never see Ted.
Ted, get in here. You got to hear what Ben just said.
Even Frank's got a little chuckle going on there at that his accounting joke. So.
And Frank doesn't usually crack a smile.
No, Frank.
He's very much the opposite of Barney.
Yeah. Barney's always smiling. Frank is almost never smiling.
Right, right.
Yeah, they make a good physical pair.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. Well, back in D.C., the meetings continue, and we even get to see a familiar face or three and witness the true meaning of bipartisanship.
We sure do. Yeah, we now cut back to Washington, D.C., and we see Leslie, April, and Randy having a series of meetings with more senators. So the first one is an outside meeting, and the sun's shining, and they're talking with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Like last time, things seem to be going well. Senator Gillibrand is impressed with what they put together, and Leslie even gets the senator to sign a copy of her book.
That she is pre-autographed or pre-dedicated
for her. Yeah, pre-dedicated, because she knows what she would say. We then cut to a little bit later, and we see Leslie politely but firmly ambush Senator John McCain while he's walking down a hallway. Oh boy. He sees her coming. And much to his chagrin, with April and Randy following in her wake. We then cut to a little bit later after that, and we see the trio in a meeting with Senators Cory Booker and Orrin Hatch, who, despite being across the aisle from each other politically, surprisingly enough, see eye to eye on this issue, and in fact seem to be buddies, especially within the purview of their Polynesian folk music band.
Yeah, across the aisle.
You get it?
ISLE.
You get it?
You get it? Get
it's
it?
A
get
pun.
It? Cory Booker.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was funny.
It's very funny.
Yeah. Well, back at the accounting firm, Barney fills the team in on the benefits of the consulting role. And on the surface, it looks like it might be a role that could be a perfect fit for April. But is April the perfect fit for it?
That's the question.
It is.
Yeah, we now cut back to good old Pawnee, and we see Ben, Ron, and Andy talking with Barney about a potential position for April.
Robonstantine. Play the clip.
April Ludgate Dwyer. She worked on the Grizzle deal that you guys did the finances for.
Now, I know that you're opening up a consulting wing, and we just think that April would be a great hire.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Barney. We're obviously very familiar with what consulting is, but why don't you go ahead and tell my friends here, because I don't think that they know.
Well, it's really about finding creative solutions to difficult problems. Now, a lot of times there's firing, so consultants aren't exactly well-liked.
Holy crap. This is the job for her. I can feel it. She'll take it. Now let's talk perks. Does she get the summer's off? Is it like school?
Son, easy. Well, what did she major in? Economics? Accounting?
She designed her own major. Halloween studies.
Trust me, Barney. She's brilliant and a very fast learner. Does that compound your interest? Huh? What do you say? Huh, Barney?
Ben, that was amazing.
Thank you.
But it's too late for her to apply. I'm sorry, but we're not really taking any more applicants. Though I could make an exception for someone else.
Not interested.
Oh, Andy.
Sweet,
Andy,
stupid Andy.
Yeah, well. So maybe not. We'll see, right?
Well, I mean, it's not the dumbest idea anyone's ever had. I mean, it does hit a lot of the points that Andy wrote down on her list of things that April's interested in.
It's true. I mean, he was checking boxes.
Yep.
There's that, yeah. Well, back in D.C., the focus shifts from future possibilities for April to an unexpected opportunity for Leslie. And talk about checking career goal boxes, Mark.
Oh, yeah. We're back in Washington, D.C. now, and we see Leslie talking with Randy. And I think, so April isn't here right now. I think it's just the two of them.
Yeah.
And we quickly learn two things. A, in general, they're making good progress. 5 yeses and 4 noes. So, hey, not a bad start. And B, Randy tells Leslie that Mike Norbert is retiring from his position, and as a result, they'd like to promote her to Deputy Director of Operations and Interior.
Wow.
Leslie is blown away at this and excitedly accepts, even though it means she and Ben will have to move to D.C., which, I mean, given that Ben's now running for Congress,
I mean, it's not crazy.
May not be the worst thing in the world. It really surprised me how quickly she was like, yep, because she didn't even think twice about leaving Pawnee.
I think she's in a different place, and she's I think she's got 1 foot in D.C. mentally.
Yes.
So I think she was kind of ready for this, and especially I think because of Ben's candidacy. She's convinced he's eventually going to win, even if not this round.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then, of course, you know, fun with acronyms, right? She's going to have to complete the Senior Executive Service Candidate Development Program. She's like, oh, you mean SCSCDEP?
Yeah, SCSCDEP.
Yeah. It's like, it remind me of Katumps back in the day.
Oh, Katumps.
Katumps. How we miss thee.
I know.
Well, back in Pawnee, the guys meet up in Ben's office, and Andy seems convinced that they've found the right job, but it still seems like a long shot, and the guys turn to at least one unconventional resource to assist them.
Yeah. Back in Pawnee, we now cut to City Hall, where we see Ben, Andy, and Ron in Ben's office discussing, as you said, the possible consulting position at Tilton and Radomski. And even though Barney told them it was too late for April to apply, they came to the conclusion that they should still give it a shot. And so they decide to recruit the rest of the gang, meaning Craig, Donna, and even though they didn't want to admit it, get me Gary Gergich. So they can all work together to make the most impressive presentation possible for Barney on April's behalf.
Well, we'll see what the dream team can do. It's like the Olympic dream team there.
I love the camera shot, too, because at first you go, you know who we have to ask. And you hear Andy and Ron go, no, don't ask him, please don't. And you want to do the grunt work and the mindless work? And they're like, no. And so he reaches down, and the camera lowers and swoops up on his face. Get me Gary Gergich. Great.
Yep. Well, we now bounce back to D.C. and visit one of my favorite park benches on the mall, where Leslie finally realizes that her original plan for April wasn't quite right and what April really wants.
That's right. We now are back in Washington, D.C., and we see Leslie and April sitting outside together by the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool. Robonstantine, play the clip.
Look around, April. What do you see?
Mountains, water, sky. You looking at me like a crazy person?
I see a new home. I am gonna take that job. Ben's gonna run for Congress. He will win eventually. Mm. And then we're gonna split our time between Washington and Pawnee.
That's great. It looks like everything is falling into place for you.
For us, April. For us.
Oh, God. Whoa, what is that over there? A lamppost? Is that historic, do you think?
No, they put that in the 70s. Look, I am so ahead of my 5-year plan, which means that you're going to need a new 5-year plan. And here it is.
Wow.
Wow, it's hot. How do you make this so fast?
I keep a local binder maker on retainer in D.C.
Amazing.
We are about to embark on such an amazing journey. This is going to be our city, and this is going to be our bench. April, we have a bench in D.C.
I'm sorry, Leslie, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to work in government. I quit.
What are you talking about? You quit? Why?
Because, honestly, I don't even know if I like working in national parks or government. I just fell backwards into your world, and years have gone by, and now I'm here, and Andy and Ben have been helping me look into different jobs to figure out what I really want to do.
Ben who? Ben Wyatt? He's been helping you behind my back? Wow. Okay, well, you know what? We had a good run, but he's dead to me now.
It's just, I've been on this weird path my entire adult life, and I need to figure out what I really want.
I cannot believe you're quitting. And I cannot believe this is the first time I'm hearing it, and on our bench, of all places.
Storms away.
The audacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the bench, Mark.
On the bench.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's probably the best description of April's dilemma I've ever heard. And it came from April, which I appreciate.
That she fell backwards into Leslie's world. I think that's mostly
true. Vortex. And I get it. And like, it makes sense. I think some of the previous, you know, April machinations about her, you know, how lucky she's been, frankly, made me feel like she was a little ungrateful. This one, I think she's grateful, but she just, it's not her. She's not in control of her destiny at this point. I mean, Leslie's handing her freaking binders, telling her what to do, for one thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Of course, April isn't going to do that regardless, but I don't know. I finally got it,
I think she did fall backward into Leslie's world, but in the beginning, I don't think that that was a bad thing, because I don't know that she necessarily had a lot of direction.
No, I think, like Craig said to her previously, like, this is the best job she's ever had, and without it, she'd be a waitress.
Yeah.
I don't think he's too far off. I mean, she's very smart, but it's just, younger April did not have the ambition to succeed the way that, and I think that's been coached by Leslie a lot.
And by the
courage,
way,
certainly.
Nothing wrong with waitressing at all, but
let's say
April would not nearly have the options she has now had she not had that happen.
That's exactly right. And Craig was the one who brought that up, by the way.
Right.
So I just, and I again, you know, I've waited tables. It's a noble profession.
Really?
It's hard, and I don't ever want to do it again, but yeah.
You were a waiter?
Wow. Okay. That's how it's going to be now. All right. Well, fine.
I mean, it's not working at Burger King like I did.
Yeah, that's true. I worked at Wendy's.
Alan, I worked for the king.
I worked for the little pigtail girl hair thing. Wendy.
Oh, I just called her Raggedy Ann. Right. We didn't like Wendy. She was a competitor.
I worked for Dave's daughter.
Wow. I have nothing to add to that.
Fair enough. Well, still in D.C., Leslie turns to two of her go-tos to help her sort out feelings she's having about April's decision bomb. That's right. Waffles and Madeleine Albright.
Yep. They're almost an inseparable pair, at least in Leslie's mind.
Yep.
Yeah, so at this point, I think Leslie is just trying to wrap her head.
Yeah.
She's trying to process.
Where are we, Mark?
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you. Oh, we're still in Washington, D.C., as Leslie is processing her feelings.
Yes.
And we now cut to an eatery named Lincoln's Waffle Shop.
I love that so much.
Where we see Leslie drowning her sorrows in waffles, as is apropos.
Sure. Yeah.
As well as good company and conversation with her good friend, Madeleine freaking Albright.
That's crazy.
As Leslie vents, Madeleine Albright listens, and then she tells Leslie, look, you're a wonderful friend, but you're also very focused and driven, sometimes to the point where you forget about people's feelings.
I love that.
And Madeleine sums it up by saying, look, Leslie, at the end of the day, all you can do is give April the best advice you have to offer, and maybe a little push, but the rest is up to her. She has to be able to make up her own mind.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
And well delivered by Madeleine Albright, who's certainly not an actress. I thought she did great in this episode.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought she did a fantastic job.
Absolutely. Well, back in Ben's office, the PR dream team, yes, including Gary, that is, seemingly did a pretty good job building up April for the consulting position, but not everyone is convinced that it's enough.
we now cut back to Pawnee, and as you mentioned, we see the gang, including Gary, Larry, Jerry, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
We see the gang working hard in Ben's office to put together the best presentation they can on April's behalf, hoping to convince Barney to give her a shot. Donna, for example, even included $500 cash in case they want to go the straight up bribe route. I mean, she's going to find him a way to win, right?
Yeah, she's on the team. She's winning.
So we see an Andy talking head then where he tells us, you know, it seems like all in all, yeah, they did a pretty good job. But he has a plan to go the extra mile, .. And then we cut to a little bit later, and It's now dark outside. So maybe late evening, you know, nighttime, whatever.
Yeah.
And we see Barney Varmn walking out to his car at the parking lot of Tilton and Radomski. And he presses the button on his remote, and we hear his car beep. And then, strangely, the camera pans up just a little bit, and we see a picture of April with the eyes cut out, gently rising up from behind a nearby car.
Spooky
at which point, Andy is now apparently in a very Hannibal Lecter-esque moment, wearing April's face as a mask, and then Andy jumps out and he starts screaming enthusiastically, "Give me the job! My name's April and my talent is explosive!" And at that point, Andy cheerfully starts throwing firecrackers, which accidentally land inside Barney's car.
Yeah.
And Andy cheerfully chants, "USA, USA," while Barney screams in fright and horror, trying not to have a heart attack as his car gets absolutely dismantled by the explosions.
Oh my gosh. And then Andy has the audacity, "When should I tell April to show up?"
"My car."
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the April mask.
It is terrific. Yeah. It is frightening as hell at first when he rises up from behind the car.
Yeah. It reminded me of one of those little Japanese ghosts.
It does.
Kind of. I mean, just because April has like got the dark hair and like her complexion and stuff. Yeah.
It did have that kind of visage.
You know, I did that once.
Did you really?
Here's what I did. What I did is it was someone's birthday, and we went to some place because on account of it was their birthday.
Sure.
And then so then the person whose birthday it was said, "Hey, I have to go to the bathroom." So they did, and they left the table. And then while they were gone in the bathroom, I handed out masks of, remember the great series, The X-Files?
Of course.
And remember The Lone Gunman?
Oh, yeah.
So there is a guy named Frohickey on there.
I remember him, yeah.
And he was actually a writer, I think, for the show.
For the show, yeah.
And he's very, very funny. So I had Frohickey masks because we were all into X-Files out there because they were real nerdy. And so I passed around the Frohickey masks and we all like taped them to our heads because we don't know science. And then then the person came back and he saw a whole table full of Frohickeys staring at him. And then he screamed and ran out. It was glorious.
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So take that. That's, so, yeah, you know, Andy had a great idea.
See, obviously, if you had it first, it is a great idea.
It's fantastic.
Maybe not the fireworks.
I mean, the execution, questionable.
Yeah, that is questionable.
The idea, fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we'll give him that much.
Yeah.
Well, while we wait to see how Barney reacts, it's a new day in DC, and April and Leslie take a few minutes to really hear each other out.
Yeah, that's right. We now cut back to Washington, D.C., where we once again see Leslie and April. I think it's the next day.
It is the next day.
And we once again see Leslie and April sitting outside at their bench by the Lincoln Memorial reflecting pool, and they're getting ready to talk. Robinson team, play the clip.
Hey, thank you for coming.
Yeah, well, I had to miss the memorable rain gutters of Washington walking tour, so this better be good.
I'm sorry I blew up at you yesterday. I really want all of my friends to be happy together, but more importantly, I just want them to be happy. If you feel like you need to move on, I totally get it.
Okay, turn around.
What? Why?
Because I'm about to say something serious, and I can't do it if I have to look you in the eye, please.
Okay.
Now take your shoes off and wear them like mittens.
April.
Okay, sorry. When I started working for you, I was aimless. And just thought everything was stupid and lame, and you turned me into someone with goals and ambition, which is really the only reason why I'm even thinking about what I really want. And I just want to say thank you. And I love you very much. Which is why I've decided not to turn you into a sea urchin, which I could do, because I am an actual witch with powers, and I'm evil, and I hate everything.
I know you do. I know. Thank you, April. So you don't have any idea what you want to do? Well, here's the good news. I am on the case. I know some people who might be able to help us. Come on.
Well, we don't have to wait long to see what Leslie has in mind. And in this plan, Leslie's turning to a resource that might be a little more objective than she can be.
That's right. So we're still in Washington, D.C., and it's just a little later, I think. And we now cut to the American Service Foundation. And Leslie and April are inside, and Leslie is introducing April to Alyssa, an employee there who is very familiar with Leslie's enthusiasm.
I love it.
Yeah. So Leslie tells April, the American Service Foundation matches young people who are trying to explore a new path with one of the thousands of jobs across America that help communities. And Leslie is hoping Alyssa can help April figure out what she wants to do. And with that, Alyssa and April walk back into the office together while Leslie waits in the lobby silently, or not so silently, cheering "Hey, April" on. We then cut to a little bit later, and we see Leslie is still at the American Service Foundation. She is impatiently waiting in the lobby for April to finish with Alyssa, talking to her good friend Madeline Albright on the phone to try and calm her nerves.
Poor Madeline.
Roe Bonstantine, play the clip.
I don't know, Madeline. They're taking forever, and I'm starting to lose it. Talk to me, okay? Your voice makes me calm. Tell me another Yeltsin story. Okay, she's here. I have to go. Bye. Say hi to your daughters. Hey, hi. How did it go?
I'm great. I know exactly what I want to do.
Yes! Is it Teach for America? No. Habitat for Humanity? No. It's working with animals.
No. I want to work here. At the foundation. I want to be like Alyssa. I want to tell people what to do and then send them far away from me. It's perfect. And it hits everything on my list. Creative problem solving, working one-on-one.
I am 100,000% in support of this idea. This is an amazing idea. I love this idea, and I love you. So are they hiring? What did Alyssa say when you told her?
Nothing. I didn't tell her yet. I wanted to see if you thought it was a good idea first. What? Bad idea?
You wanted to run something by?
Oh, my God. Yes. So will you help me?
April, you don't need me. You can get any job you want, all by yourself. Well, obviously, I'm going to vet your resume, and we'll hold some mock interviews, and I'll choose your outfit and everything.
Of course.
You can get this sucker on your own.
Oh,
I hope she does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Andy is back from D.C., and he and April take a few minutes to catch up while Ron and Ben leave Andy at home, thank God, and try to make a final pitch on her behalf.
Yeah, yeah. It, in our kicker here, we once again find ourselves at April and Andy's creepy house. Yep. Some time has passed here. Now Leslie and April are back. Yep. They're back in Pawnee. And we see April and Andy in their creepy house, both kind of filling each other in on what happened for each of them during April's trip to D.C. Robonstein, play us out, sir.
So long story short, we might have found you the perfect job, but also I might have blown it. Ben and Ron are there now to try to fix it. And if they don't, I feel like it's kind of on them.
Everyone is being so nice to me lately. It's weird. I feel like I need to take a shower in pig's blood to wash all the niceness off me.
It's because we love you. We want you to be happy. This consulting job could be the answer.
Yeah, so about that.
Please don't hold anything Andy did against April. She is an exceptional human being who married a well-meaning goofball.
Yeah, and I think that presentation we put together says it all.
All we're asking is that you meet with her and seriously consider her for the job.
And if she disappoints you, you can hold me accountable. Right?
You know what? If her friends are trying this hard, there must be something amazing about her. Tell her I'll meet with her tomorrow.
Oh, hold on. April? Hey. We were just talking about you. We got some good news. Oh, boy.
Oh.
Okay. Mm. She doesn't want the job.
Poor Barney. I see.
Well, this is uncomfortable.
Fade to black.
I love it. Oh, my goodness. Poor Barney. I still wonder, this many years later, like, does he reflect back on his friendship with Ben and just maybe wish he'd never met him?
Maybe for a moment, but yeah. I think he then tosses that aside and says, no, Ben's wonderful.
Ted!
Get in here, Ted!
Get in here!
Oh, my gosh. The great John Balma.
Yep.
All right. Well, fade to black, Mark.
Yep.
Let's take a quick break. We'll get our notes together and wrap this thing up when we come back.
Yep. Let's do it, man.
All right. We'll be right back, everybody.
Are you looking for an exciting new career? Then hang tight as we might have the perfect job for you. Hello. This is Ron Swanson. Now, pay close attention because I might have the very job that will change your life. All you have to do is answer yes or no to the following simple questions, and we will quickly find out if you have what it takes to join us here at the very good building and development company in our newest role, apprentice woodworker. Now, I am aware that may not sound that exciting, but do not let the title fool you. Even our vice president, Don Swanson, is only a level 3 novice plus per our exacting standards, and he has worked here since we opened 4 years ago and has 23 years experience in woodworking. He is also not my brother, despite the very similar name. That would be nepotism, and that is not something we openly support here at VGBDC. Certainly, we can all agree that using your God-given talents to shape raw materials into something stunning that will last for generations is a noble profession. But we still need to be able to stand working with you. So, without further ado, let's get started with round one of our specially designed Fear Factors quiz, not related to the popular game show, to see if you have what it takes to be considered. All right, here we go. Factors 1, 2, and 3. Please take a step backward and have a seat if you respond no to any of these. Number 1, I consider myself self-sufficient and work independently. Number 2, I appreciate the value of a good day of hard work. And number 3, you have never been considered creative or artistic. For those of you still standing, congratulations, you move on to round 2. For those of you now seated, I am afraid that you are welcome to find other work. Maybe try the local supermarket or the library. All right, moving on to round 2. Here are factors 4, 5, and 6. Once again, please take a step backwards and have a seat if you answer no to any of these. Number 4. I am comfortable using everyday household tools and own at least a basic set of tools. Number 5. I know the difference between a wood screw and a metal screw and when to use each. And number 6. I know more than the guy working at my local Home Depot. If you find yourself seated at this point, thank you for coming. There is no door prize, only shame, and we wish you the best of luck. At Baskin Robbins or perhaps your local pet store. For those of you who still remain, welcome to round 3, our final and most difficult round. As before, you answer no to any question, you take a seat. Strap in. Number 7. I am confident working with a variety of wood species from domestic soft maple to East India rosewood. Number 8. I know my way around a Grizzly G1033Z or Powermatic 15HH industrial planer. And, for all the marbles, number 9. Anyone who claims that cabins are more about the experience than the build and can be beautiful even if they are made of something other than natural wood should be publicly ridiculed until they go away. If you are now seated, well, enjoy your complimentary beverage and please get the f*** out. For those of you still standing, congratulations. You are now invited to formally apply at www.vgdbc.com/ihavewhatittakes to schedule an appointment with us in the shop so that we can perform a hands-on test of your skills. It is polite at this point that I wish you good luck. However, I will be transparent. I am pretty much ready to wait until my son John is 7 or 8 and have him join the business. At the rate he is learning, he'll be better than most candidates by then and certainly old enough to take on the responsibility. You should see him work the bandsaw. I don't think I've ever seen anything more precious. Thank you. That is all.
Everybody, we're back. Well, hey, Mark, let's talk about deleted scenes because that's what we do at this point.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a lot this week. We had, what was it, a minute 53 and maybe 4 scenes? There's a little bit of a play on stock options that are sock options instead,
which,
in which Andy has a really good moment there where he kind of like makes Ben feel stupid, which I kind of enjoyed, actually. The next two scenes are really kind of like Barney misunderstanding that Ben may want this job, then realizing it's, this is April person who he knows because she had basically interned or something like that with them in the past. And there's a flashback scene as the kind of the third clip where April's at Tilton and TNR.
Yeah.
She's at TNR, Randomsky. And, that's an interesting scene. I'm intrigued by it, and I think it would have not worked because I think here's what's weird about it. It would have put April literally in the A and the B story.
Yeah.
And by not doing that, I think they made it a little more pure. Let's just say it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It gives the different people their opportunity to shine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is a funny scene.
Yeah, it is.
If I were going to put it in like the, you know, greatest outtakes or, you know, behind the scenes scenes, I would definitely use it. But
I agree.
Overall, these were the right scenes to cut and we've got our canon episode. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into tropes first and fun facts. I'll be honest. I had trouble with first on this one. I'm hoping you did not.
I had 3.
Okay.
I had Leslie is offered and accepts her new position of Deputy Director of Operations and Interior.
Solid. Yeah.
April finds her first post-government job working at the American Service Foundation.
Yeah, those are good.
We actually meet one of Ron's brothers in person.
Oh. Well, and we didn't even know he had brothers before this episode.
Yeah, we did.
Double down on that. Well, we did. Ben did not.
That's what he says. Yeah.
Tell me more.
Eh, you may be right. I know that there were hints that Ron had brothers, like, all the way back to Hunting Trip.
Okay, that's exactly where my head went. Is that where he's drinking the whiskey?
And he says, hey, Leslie, you know, the Super Bowl I usually watch with my brothers. It's in a couple of months, so you can come by and shoot me in the head at halftime.
Right.
And so he mentions brothers, plural.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
I would have not remembered that in any way. So, no, that's really good. My only other first was April and Leslie are in D.C. together.
Mm.
So it's the first time we've seen that combo in D.C.
That's true.
We've seen each of them in D.C., but not together.
So yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. How about tropes? I've got an exhaustingly long and annoying list of these.
Well, mine may not be as long, but I have a decent list. I have a punching bag Jerry, Gary, Larry, Terry.
I missed that one.
Oh, you idiot.
I don't even know how. Right, exactly. I don't even know how.
All right.
What'd you got?
Sweet Stupid Andy.
Yeah.
Out the Wazoo.
Yeah.
Food Driven Ron.
Yeah.
Ron Hates the Government.
Yeah.
Ben is a Nerd. Barney Loves Ben. Barney Gets Crushed. Leslie the Steamroller. But only a little bit.
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
Fun with names, lots.
Lots.
Mugs to the camera, lots. Especially Ben.
Yeah.
But April some too.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like they're the big people that do it mostly.
Yeah, Pratt or Andy had one. He had a double take once, which I thought was funny. Yeah.
And then finally I have Leslie Note binders.
Nice.
How about you?
All right, strap in. And if I repeat any, I apologize. It's just easier just to look at the list.
Sure.
We definitely had the fun with names and all over the place. But X goes to Washington, right? Mm. This is our second episode. So yeah. I called that a trope. I've got... I created a new acronym because we're toward the end and we needed one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's AFLOAC, which is AFLOAAC, like the AA.
Like the insurance place?
Yeah. Kind of like AFLOAC. AFLOAC. Avoid freaking out Leslie at all costs.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. Because, you know, just don't. Ben is scared of Leslie. I thought that was appropriate here because it's true. You know, this one hit me and we probably could have made this a trope so many times and didn't. Parks and politics, right? I mean, yes,
tell me more.
Parks is about politics, but, you know, it's part of a political system, right, in government. But yet, not every episode is about politics.
Yeah.
Many have been, though, and this is one of them. So, yeah, just thought it was interesting to look at it through that lens.
I guess that's true. Yeah. I guess that's true. I mean, that's its... that's its lifeblood, but it doesn't always focus on that.
It's not always political.
Yeah.
But this one certainly is. I mean, they got real life people in it for no other reason. All right, I'll keep going real quick. Andy lists. Andy made lots of lists throughout the series. Mm. And here's another episode where he did. Andy band names. He mentions actually a couple of those things in that or potential band names that he'd considered. That first list he made for April.
No, that's names that he wants to be called.
Well, right.
He wants to be called Count Chocula.
Well, that's true. I guess they weren't technically band names. Yeah, fair enough. All right. All right. So I've invented one that didn't exist. Over-prepared Leslie, over-the-top Leslie,
yeah.
Which you kind of hit on. You hit on binders. Let's see. Oh, Ron loves April. I mean, that's apparent here.
Yeah.
I think we've had that.
That's a good one.
Leslie autographs. This is not the first time she's basically pre-signed someone's book for them to sign for her. Yeah,
that's true.
John McCain. I made him a trope this episode because he came back.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I loved. Government acronyms. That's all over the place. Testimonials because she gets excited that she might get to testify in front of Congress.
Yep.
Ben appreciates Gary. Another reference to it here. Like he knows that despite everyone being annoyed by all of those things about Larry, that those are the things he believes he's good at.
I'm trying to decide whether I want to say something about that now or later. I think mechanically you're right.
Yeah.
Although I will say, I'll touch on this later.
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed that they didn't seem, in my opinion, to carry over into season 7 what they established at the end of season six, which is like my boy Larebones.
Yeah, Larebones. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's like it seems like Ben just now really gets borderline annoyed with him along with everybody. And I don't see much of like his love for Larebones.
It's like he got back to the place he was before where he was too embarrassed to be Larry's friend.
Yeah, but you don't even see a hint of that.
Jerry. Whatever his name is this week. Yeah. Back to Gary. Yeah.
But still, he's a great mindless drone. He's the best.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. I had three last and I'm done.
Okay.
Four. Sorry. Benches.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Right.
That's a very good one.
Andy goes overboard, which not the first time.
Mm.
April's macabre. And she definitely is in this episode multiple times. And I think you said this one a different way, but I like the way I said it. Sorry, Barney.
Oh, yeah. That's Barney gets crushed.
That's a trope. So, yeah. How about goofs or fun facts, Mark?
I had one goof that I got from the Wide Wide World of Web.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is time travel.
Sure.
Which, I mean, is real, as we know.
We know that.
And so we're supposedly in the future at this point, meaning this takes place supposedly in 2017.
Yeah.
So the goof then is that April and Leslie met with Senator Barbara Boxer, although it turns out that Senator Barbara Boxer actually retired in 2016.
16.
Meh. Whatever.
Yeah. And they had no way of knowing that.
No, not at all.
Because this episode, you know, if it aired in February of 15, it was probably shot at the end of 14, mm-hmm. technically, right? Or summer of 14 even.
Right.
So that's 2.5 years where it happened. So,
right.
Yeah.
Years.
Years. How about any fun facts, Mark?
A few. One of the supposed Ron brothers at a very good yeah. building and development guy. One of them actually was Nick Offerman's brother.
Yeah, Matt.
The guy who plays Don Swanson.
Don
I think.
Swanson. Yeah, that's Matt. That's Matt.
The one that he actually admitted was his brother.
Right. That's true. Yeah. So that's Matt Offerman. Yeah.
We already talked about how this is actually not the first time it was hinted that Ron had multiple brothers. Hunting trip. That's kind of interesting.
I totally forgot.
This is only one of three episodes in the entire series where Aziz Ansari doesn't appear.
Yeah.
What else? So we had a lot of cameos, including Senators Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand, who would later run against each other to be the Democratic nominee in 2020, and both lost to Joe Biden,
yep.
now president, and who has also appeared on the show.
That's
not our show. It just that has appeared on Parks and Rec.
He's considered it strongly. We're still in talks with his people.
We hope. You had mentioned, you know, the XXX goes to Washington.
Yeah,
so this is kind of a take on the season 5 opener, Ms. Nope Goes to Washington, yeah. which is in itself a play on the 1939 film, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Correct, sir. The great Jimmy Stewart.
And the only other one I had is, Ben mentions to April's mockery, him discussing a Twin Peaks reboot in 2017. And perhaps this is could be referred to as like the whole 2016 Twin Peaks revival that occurred. I don't know.
It's, yeah.
Just
so like the possible. Simpsons, they predicted the future?
Kind of.
Yeah,
maybe.
A little bit. Yeah. Fair enough.
That's all. Do you have any?
Yeah, I didn't have anything else. The only other thing I had, and I know sometimes we cover this as we do the scores, was our saying goodbye list.
Yeah.
I officially had John Balma as Barney Varm and Bob Bancroft as Frank Mann.
Yes.
So
I would
a lot of one and dones.
I would say in the interest of the differentiation between saying goodbye and the one and dones are the ones on the saying goodbye list have been on the show before.
Yeah.
So because of that, I'm going to put in the saying goodbye Senator Barbara Boxer.
Oh, yeah.
Who we first saw in Ms. Nope Goes to Washington.
Yep.
And the other one who we first saw in Ms. Yep. Nope Goes to Washington, Senator John McCain. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, yeah. No, you're right. I did not consider them one and dones, but I hadn't really considered them recurring. And I'd forgotten she had been on the show before, but you're mm-hmm. exactly right, yeah. It's hard to forget the previous one with John McCain, though.
Yeah, in the coat closet.
Yeah, so good. But and then in my head, I'm like, is this Billy's last episode? Billy Eichner?
No.
But he's got one more. It's weird. He has one more, and it's the last episode.
Yep.
So like Aziz, he's going to disappear for a moment and then come back.
Actually, believe it or not, so do Vaughn and Lon are coming back, but not Don.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, maybe Matt Offerman was just too busy, you know? I don't know.
That may be.
So, yeah.
Maybe he had a good bacon and eggs run.
Yeah. I've heard him talk about his brother before, so I thought that was interesting. Yeah. So.
One brother.
Just one. Shoot. Get out of here. All right. Well, let's get into our score, Mark. I think it's time.
All right. Scoring incoming. All right.
Did you do MVPs this week, Mark? Tell me.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna. Right. As a matter of fact, I did co-MVP, so put that in your pipe and smoke it. And my co-MVPs for this episode are the amazing Aubrey Plaza as April Ludgate Dwyer, and the comedic Chris Pratt as Andy Dwyer.
All right.
So in the A story, you know, Amy Poehler did a great job, but I thought it was Aubrey Plaza that really brought it home for me.
Me too.
And this is largely, I think, a vehicle that it was intended, I think, as a tip of the hat to April's journey.
Yeah.
Aubrey has always done a great job portraying April for all her snark and false bravado. Yeah. Although in earlier seasons...
Weirdness
or macabreness. Yeah. In earlier seasons, her role tended to be background humor for the most part. I mean, it was good.
Yeah.
It was very, very good. But she was mostly background rather than like a part of the main driving force of the central plot. You know?
That's true.
Well, this changed over the years. And we got to appreciate, I think, what a complex character April Ludgate actually was.
Yeah.
I know this isn't the first time that April showed her vulnerable side to Leslie, or even the first time that April told Leslie she loves her. I think we saw this, for example, in season 3, episode 9, April and Andy's fancy party.
Yeah.
Where they got married, right? And having said that, I still thought Aubrey did a fantastic job portraying April's anxiety, but in a sweet way. Like, she not only looks up to Leslie enough to make this decision painful, but she also loves Leslie and she didn't want to hurt her friend.
Yep.
And I think she conveyed that well in what she did.
Yeah.
For my other co-MVP, Chris Pratt, I thought was great. And I thought he did a good job kind of spearheading the B story, the Pawnee half of Let's Find April a Job.
Yeah.
We came up with the trope Sweet Stupid Andy a long time ago. Yeah. And this episode, I think, was a good example of why that trope exists, because boy, is that Andy stupid. But mm-hmm. he's also very sweet and he's very well-meaning, and this is why it works so well. Yeah. My favorite scene of the entire episode, I know I already said this, was when Andy slowly rose from behind the parked car wearing the Hannibal Lecter mask of April, complete with explosives and lots of scary energy.
You'd almost give it to him just for that scene.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Past my co-MVPs, I can honestly say that you know, Amy Poehler is Leslie Knope. Adam Scott has Ben Wyatt, Nick Offerman is Ron Swanson. They all did fantastic in this episode as well.
Like, they're still hitting on all cylinders in season 7.
They were extremely funny. They played very important roles in the plot moving forward. Yeah. In some ways, it's a shame that Donna and Jerry were once again more or less relegated to background roles. But I mean, I was okay with it because A, they each did get a few funny moments
and
lines.
They did, a few, yeah.
And B, Donna did just have that whole episode about her, you know, getting married.
She was eponymous. Yeah.
So she's Donna. And then, so I can let this slide. I think that's fine.
That's fair.
I did notice no Tom.
And Lucy, right? Because they've become kind of a plot point in the arc.
Right.
Yeah, like, what's going to happen with those two kids?
I don't know what happened with Tucy. Tom's not in there this episode. And I got to tell you, it's not so much that I minded him being gone, but I will say from a plot perspective, when the guys in Pawnee reach their all hands on deck phase, enough so to recruit Donna and Jerry and Craig to help out, it was a little odd that they didn't see Tom there
as well,
especially since one of Tom's specialties
is
giving killer presentations.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
It didn't ruin anything. I just thought it was interesting to note, you know?
And he's been there, done that with presentations a lot, and it might have... Yeah, I think it's okay that he did not do that this time. I thought he was missed in the episode,
I wish that they had given a little tip of the hat, like, you know...
Yeah.
Tom is inseparable from Lucy. Oh, my God. They're just...
something.
Blah, blah, blah,
to acknowledge
blah, blah.
They weren't written out all of a sudden. Yeah. Right. Agreed.
You mentioned, you know, the saying goodbye. So we had a nice list of guest stars. I always split it into Not Done Yet, Saying Goodbye, and One and Done. So Not Done Yet, Billy Eichner as Craig Middlebrooks. Michael Strassner as Von Swanson. And Herbert Russell as Lon Swanson. Go figure. You mentioned John Balma as Barney. We're saying goodbye to as well as Bob Bancroft.
9 episodes he was in.
Yeah.
Which is pretty high on the list.
Yeah.
I mean, it's up there.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
Bob Bancroft as Frank Mann as well, as well as Tilton and Radomski.
That's true.
We salute you, sir.
Yeah.
We salute you.
Yeah.
Barbara Boxer, John McCain, we mentioned them. The One and Duns, Michael Shoemaker as Randy Steptaskajic. It hurts to pronounce that name. I couldn't hardly do it.
Love it.
Liz Femi as Alyssa Shanes, who worked at the place that helped April to find the job.
Yeah, she was Alyssa, yeah.
We already talked about Matt Offerman, Nick's brother, as Don Swanson, who was the only one of them that had any lines.
That's true.
Madeline Albright, of course, rest in peace. Orrin Hatch, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yeah, nice.
So a few, I don't know if you want to consider these nitpicks, but
go for it.
It's my turn. I get
start
to
start negative and positive. That's the way I like it. I was like bad news before good news.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, this is just my opinion, so I could be wrong. I'm not. So the final job that April ended up choosing, it was okay.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it didn't feel nearly as satisfying as I had hoped that it would.
I realize that
it's easy for me to take pot shots at the writers all these years later, and I'm not trying to do that. And in the end, it's not even that the end solution was a, a bad one per se. Right. I think what makes it stand out for me, maybe in kind of a bad way, is honestly how much I really liked the initial idea of April becoming a veterinarian.
Yeah.
Because it encompasses her love of animals.
Yep.
It's been her dream to work with animals ever since she was a kid, which we found out in the season 5 finale.
Yeah.
It gave her a plausible way to use her considerable intelligence without having to interact with people who suck.
Yeah.
And it also gave her a way to have a plausible exit path from government work.
Yep.
Like, I thought it was such a freaking good idea. And this is not a bad idea. It's just not that good.
I think if her and Alyssa had come to the agreement that she really does love animals and that she's missing that now that she hasn't been doing that for a while, and they found a great shelter who needs a good director with experience to run in D.C. so that they had a reason to be in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
that would have been a more satisfying conclusion.
Yeah.
It would have been in character. She gets to tell people what to do and send them away. It was kind of a funny joke, but it was jokey. Yeah, I think that's why it wasn't satisfying.
If this is meant as a respectful tip of the hat to April's journey, I so like the veterinarian angle more than this. And again, it's not that this was bad.
Yeah.
It's just that was good.
Yeah.
So just my opinion.
The Halloween studies, Mark, will not get you to be a veterinarian. So.
I also might be in the minority here, but for me, the whole Washington trip wasn't nearly as exciting as I thought it would be. Yeah, honestly, I'm torn because on the one hand, I mean, I liked all the cameos by the famous political people. That was fantastic. And it was sort of nice to see Leslie do her thing.
Yeah.
But I think that I was a slight bit bored, honestly, by all these scenes because they were neat, I noticed that A, they didn't really move the plot along, so to speak, and B, for this episode in particular, I was far more interested in what was going on with April than I was with Leslie.
Me too.
And I must admit, I touched on this, I'm going to say it again, I've been a little disappointed in how Ben doesn't seem to be as close with Jerry as he used to be, which I guess isn't a huge deal, but I really liked it when they did this, particularly at the end of season 6, and I was just a bit disappointed with Ben's friendship with Lair Bones. It didn't seem to survive in the same way into the future.
Wouldn't it be cool if they'd kept that going, but people now just don't get Ben? Like, remember, Ben doesn't get it?
Mm-hmm.
People don't get Ben.
Right.
I could have lived with that. Like that would have been cool.
Yeah. Maybe they put him into the same category as Jerry.
Yeah, they kind of lumped him in. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my rambling. Time for the crazy Mark rubric.
All right.
I'm going to give this sucker a 4.0 base score. I thought that the A and B stories were good. I thought that the A story had even more potential and promise than the B story, but it didn't quite reach its potential. So therefore making both of these more or less equal in my books. They're both good, but not super, super, super great. I'm going to give half a point each for each of my two co-MVPs, Aubrey Plaza as April Ludgate Dwyer and Chris Pratt as the always delightful, sweet, stupid Andy Dwyer. I'm going to give half a point for an honorary tip of the hat to Amy Poehler as Leslie Knope, Adam Scott as Ben Wyatt, and Nick Offerman as Ron Swanson. They really, really did a great job. I'm going to give half a point for a decent use of their comedic bench, including the great list of guest stars we covered a few minutes ago, so I won't say that again. I'm going to give another half point for what I call the political cameo combo. Despite my earlier complaints, it was kind of cool to see all those political figures, you know, Barbara Boxer, John McCain, Orrin Hatch, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Madeleine freaking Albright as contemporaries of Leslie. Meh. All right. That was kind of cool. I'm going to give half point for what I call a Tilt and Radomski combo. I always love going back to the comfortable setting of Tilt and Radomski accounting and watching them fawn over Ben, especially Barney. They're just something that makes me disproportionately giddy.
Those are my favorite parts of the episode.
I'm going to give half a point for what I called the Swanson brother combo.
Mm-hmm.
Just as I get disproportionately giddy visiting Barney, Varman, and friends, there was something about meeting all the Swanson brothers, alleged Swanson brothers, Your Honor.
The brother.
At the very good building and construction company that I love. Maybe it's pumping out that last bit of Swanson lore at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I'm going to give one more half point for Andy wearing the April mask. This was just wacky and stupid and absolutely delightful genius. And I just bust up laughing.
And a great platform for John Balma's physical comedy reaction.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So you add up all the crazy Mark points and you come up with 8.0 little Sebastians. I I expected I was going to give this a higher score. I was a little disappointed I didn't give it a higher score. I wanted to like this episode so much more than I did. And it wasn't a bad episode. I just had very, very high expectations for it. But because of all the points I made, and I think I expected so much more out of it than I got, for me, I couldn't justify giving it more than an 8.0. So,
did you enjoy it at an 8.5 and talk yourself into an 8.0 mechanical score like I sometimes do?
No, I think it was a...
True, just straight up.
Everything involved.
All right, fair enough.
I wish that they had zigged when they zagged with the plot. So it's kind of the feels as well.
All right, cool.
So anyway, that's my review. Alan, rock the scuba.
All right, scuba incoming.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to start with my MVPs. And like you, I was certainly... Aubrey Plaza was number one, and there was no talking me out of it. In fact, I felt so strongly about that, I almost just said, Aubrey Plaza, done.
Yeah.
We're so late in the series, I do like to recognize other people. And in this case, I wanted to recognize Amy again. It feels like you could do that every episode, and we've talked about that. But I feel like April is a character, and Aubrey's delivery, the way she got... I don't think Leslie/Amy set it up for her to have that performance this week. And I think the fact that Leslie took a step back mechanically allowed April to take a step forward and be the kind of the prominent person. I mean, the whole episode was about April at the end of the day, right? I mean, so that was hard to miss. I mean, she's even in the title, right? I mean, here we go again. So
that's interesting because you talked about even like in the last episode, Amy also took an effective step back supporting Ben.
And it's what she's doing now that's working well. And yet they're featuring great Amy/Leslie-isms, you know, and Amy's doing a good job with those. So, you know, it's like just a half rung down on the ladder. But I gave my co-MVPs to Aubrey and Amy for those reasons.
All right.
I want to say something about Pratt. So he's very funny. And again, we've talked about his comedy and, you know, I'm not going to get into any of the other stuff about him outside this show. But I feel like at this point, even though the Andy character is still sweet and stupid and it's still funny, it's getting a little mechanical. And I don't know whether to blame Pratt because he's looked so far beyond this show. I mean, I got to give him solid, right? And I think we said this early on. He came back to this show after becoming Star-Lord. A lot of actors would not have done that.
Agreed.
They would have said, write me out. I'm done. Thanks for everything, but I'm the big guy.
It had to be his relationship with Michael Schur.
Had to be. So I give him credit forever for that. And I think despite that, he's still doing a good job. And there's still some great Andy moments, like the parking lot scene, where I just think I don't make this comment about those. But some of the other delivery in the episode, even though the lines are funny, they feel very mechanical and like autonomic to me. Like he's just there with the quip every time. The Andyism quip. And I would, if I were in a bad mood, I'd call it lazy writing.
What is this that you're experiencing?
I'm not in a bad mood today. I'm actually in a good mood today.
Okay.
But you know, you keep talking about it that way and I might change my mind. I there's that hint of it. Full on mechanical, you know, and bad. It's just for me, it's losing its luster. Maybe I'm missing some character growth and it could be rooted in that. It could be a lot of things. And I'll give that some thought before our next episode. And we'll watch where Andy goes from here as well, right? Because everyone's got an arc to finish, so to speak.
Right.
But we'll see. So anyway, that's why I did not choose him. I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
All the reasons you chose him, I agree with, though. That was in my head and I couldn't get there. My general notes on the episode was, it's really good, but not quite great. And really's even a little soft for me. Like I think I started with a higher score and I talked myself down. That's why I asked you.
Oh, I see.
Did you do the same thing? Because I think I watched this episode probably four times, and that's about average for me as we prepare these. I think the first time I just enjoyed it more because it'd been a long time since I'd seen it. I did really appreciate all the cameos, but I think the more I thought about it, I'm like, some of those things actually hurt the episode. Right. So, you know, I would say an AB structure, and I reflect on my scoring, an AB structure is almost always really strong for me, where it's just an A and a B story.
Because they concentrate on them.
They concentrate. Yeah, they're not tangentially off on an E and an F story and distracting themselves. So I think those are always, for me, the strongest stories. And that gave me high hopes that they would just deliver on both of them, even if it was 60-40 or whatever. But actually, in this case, it was 40-60. It's a little A, capital B story, right? And I think you said pretty much the same thing. Frankly, they could have flipped them. They could have done the show differently, and it could have been about April's journey and only that.
Well, I think it was about April's journey. It was just two different sides of the coin.
That's fair. And so what, we have a double A story then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a battery now.
A1 and A2.
A1, A2. Right. So, yeah, you know what? That's interesting. Maybe there was no B story. Maybe that's part of the problem with the show this time, and maybe why it didn't hit that. Because basically you're on the gas pedal the whole time on the April story.
Yeah.
Even on both sides of this coin.
Yeah.
You never have a moment to breathe and kind of find something else funny going on.
Right.
You know, with this giant cast of great characters, really great characters, and great comedians playing them. So I don't know. I felt out of balance, and I feel like the cameos stole precious screen time. I did really like the John McCain, and I really did like the Madeline Albright. So my fix for this episode, which I don't always present, usually I'm the lazy one, right? Mm. I'm like, that's terrible. I'm not going to tell you how to fix it, but I could do better. I just won't tell you how.
Right.
Here's how. You just do John McCain and Madeline Albright. That's it.
As a spinoff?
Yeah. Oh my God, I would watch that. Can't now, but yeah. No, those are the only two cameos you have in this episode.
Oh, I see.
The others can be referential or...
You know what? I agree with that. They're the ones that I thought brought the most oomph.
They did.
I agree.
They did. And while it was delightful to see Amy in her element, I think that's how you described it. I like the way you said that. Interacting with these other senators, and that's totally in character with her, right? I mean, she would have used her role in Interior to meet all these people who she's admired her whole life. I like that. And they could have just referenced them or even had a hello on the street and them kind of walking away really fast, like, oh God, there's Leslie again. Those would have been funny and enough for me. Where here, they took minutes. Several minutes.
Right. Time is money. Pizza is power. I mean, we learned all that.
We learned all of that in grade school. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, you've got 21 minutes and you've got to use it wisely. So that's how I fixed the episode. I came down because of all the things we just said at an 8.0 Little Sebastians.
Mm.
And like I said, I was really prepared to give it an 8.5 because I thought I was going to enjoy those things. I think in the end, I really realized they detracted from the overall success of the episode. It could have been better.
Well, and you know how sometimes we've had discussions about if a show is like, let's say, the culmination of an arc, let's say, and let's say it does a really good job.
Right.
Now, if you and I score that show really high, is that fair in the sense that does that one show deserve all the
built
accolades?
Built on the shoulders of giants, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now,
or the Lord of the Rings syndrome, as I like to call it. Yeah, I've said that several times.
Precious. But so, but what's interesting is if you flip the script, then this is actually kind of a similar thing, because I feel like the journey that April went through, like all of her lamenting over how she doesn't know what she wants to do and everything, I feel like this is going to make me retroactively like or dislike. I mean, that's strong. I don't mean completely like or dislike, but it's going to affect how I feel retroactively about all the stuff that happened, depending on how April finishes.
Yeah.
And I think I was a little disappointed that they had, let's say, a lesser end result than Veterinarian, let's say. And I think because of that, it retroactively made me go, and looking at all this stuff. And maybe that's not fair, but that's how I felt.
I'm with you. And again, like I said, I if it had just been something animal related, it didn't have to be Veterinarian, because again, she didn't go to veterinary school, right? They made that decision a long time ago. Or maybe she's decided after with Alyssa, that's what she really wants to do, and she's going back to veterinary school.
Yeah.
Like, that could have been a good arc closer for her, right?
Right.
Because she flirted with it, but maybe wasn't confident enough, and now with this life experience, she realizes that's her destiny.
Right.
I could have been much more happy with that than what they did. And I thought it was nice the way they gave her a third-party consultant, not just Leslie, and that Leslie, you know, helped her make that happen as a good friend and mentor, all those things. If this is the end of April's journey in terms of character arc, and we're going to focus on other things for the next four episodes, because Mark, we only have four episodes left.
Yikes.
I think what was missed in this episode about April is how much Ron helped her become the April she is. Now, he was certainly involved in the B story and helping her find a job because he's loyal to her and wants her to be happy.
Right.
But all those things she made Leslie said to Leslie when she made her turn her back, she could have almost said the exact same script to Ron.
I agree. They both had a hand.
They really did.
Yeah.
Mom and dad.
In different ways.
And daughter. Like, that's kind of the dynamic here.
Yeah.
And has been for a long time. So I think they gave Ron short shrift in that moment.
Maybe unintentionally.
Unintentionally. I'm sure it was. And it would have been really weird and awkward. This is one I can't solve. I'm just saying. I felt that missing. I noticed that.
Right.
Maybe they'll find a good Ron April moment in the next four episodes that will satisfy that for me. I hope so.
Yeah, I can see that.
I need that. I need conclusion on them, you know, him being happy for her and vice versa.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my only gripe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, Mark, we'll be back next time with episode 7.9, Primary.
Yep. Primary.
And, yeah. That aired on the same night. And, We've kind of been watching these in pairs a little bit, sometimes not so much, maybe this week not so much, but it's interesting. We'll see where we go from here, because I also remember that episode very fondly.
Interesting to see if Primary continues the trend that seems to have been established by some of the other pairs of shows that they were intended to be paired together, or if it's just going to be another show.
And where the second of the two is a little stronger than the first.
Maybe.
I think I'll go back and make that argument by the end.
All right.
And you can tell me if I was wrong or if you disagree. That doesn't make me wrong just because you disagree. Let's be straight on that. But you could be right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm interested in that because I think they did these pairings and I'm thinking, why? But here's the problem. Look at the Nielsen ratings of the time. Every second episode, and I'll argue most of them were better, had worse ratings. Because they trail off. That's what happens. It happens on every show, no matter how good it is. And if you put your weaker show before your stronger show, you're not putting your best foot forward.
Yeah, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and yet it's the way it works, and I don't have a solution for it. It's something that's bothering me about those really good second episodes. I don't think they got the same in their first run, at least the right recognition. Maybe here years later in syndication, that's been leveled out. But we'll see.
I mean, Alan, we have a time machine. Maybe we just go back to 2014 and just tell them, hey, Mike Scherer there.
Oh,
don't trust robots, and we want to give you some tips on how to make your show better.
Yeah, he would totally listen to us.
Sure, he would.
You know the problem, though? I just realized it. I looked at our schematic for the time machine. Mm. There's only a forward. We didn't put a reverse on it. We can't go backwards.
Stupid R&D department.
So now I don't even know how we're going to get those guys home. Problem for another episode, though.
You know, Alan, Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah?
When they make a time machine.
All my life lessons come from there, but yes.
They just take a magic marker and they draw the control on there.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to have to.
I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm saying we haven't tried it.
Yeah. I think it's going to be on our list of things to try for sure.
I agree.
So, all right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. We really, really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
Live from Pawnee is a copyrighted production of the creators. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved. Original music was created and performed by Aaron Emerson of Emerson Studios. Clips are used under fair use doctrine for the purpose of commentary and parody. Please see our website at livefrompawnee.com for more details or to contact us.